today's excursion into culinary adventure. We went to, it's a Montreal institution. I actually, to be honest, do not know much about it. I just know that
it's been there since 1927.
Yeah, 1927. And it's Dunn's Original Deli. Mm-hmm. And
it's on Metcalf.
Yeah.
It's a couple streets past Villa Marie. If you kind of know the area, if you don't, look at a map. They mark Villa Marie pretty well on the map. It's the middle of Montreal, practically. And it's just a couple streets to the west.
And our traveling companion had been there before 10 years ago and said that it was, it looked, because what I was expecting was like a 1930s diner. Mm-hmm. And he said that then it looked like a 1930s diner. But somewhere between now and 10 years ago, they redid the inside and it looks more like a sports pub, mm-hmm. which probably is better for them because they could have more seating.
Yeah, you could see where they added seating to it. They took out the dessert counter. They had a picture up as soon as you walked in of what it looked like in 1950. So you could see the difference between then and now.
Yeah.
And I could see where they probably gained maybe 10 seats by taking out the dessert
counter.
Definitely. Putting the little tiny bar against the far end of the building. The whole place is just crammed full of seats.
Yeah, it is like super economically and efficiently laid out.
And it's known for Montreal smoked meat.
Which I had never had before. And I was like, man, we can't go to Montreal and not get some Montreal smoked meat.
Yeah. But we've seen it in grocery stores all over. We almost bought it a couple times when we did really big sandwich. We weren't sure about it. We didn't know what it was. We're like, I don't know.
I wasn't even sure what kind of animal it came
from.
Yes,
it was
just meat, but it's actually brisket.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, okay.
It looks almost the same color as corned beef.
Yeah.
So
it does
taste a little different than corned beef.
And it's,
I like it a little
shaved,
better.
Oh yeah. Well, it doesn't taste as strong.
Yeah.
Well, we both got the club,
and the Montreal club.
Companion got
club.
The
Reuben.
The Reuben. Okay.
We have pictures of all of these foods, by the way. You'll be able to see them on the Podbean site. So.
Yeah. Normally, it's not a texture experience for a North American meal, but to me, that the club sandwich and the fries and the coleslaw that you get, mm-hmm. it was like a merry-go-round of pleasing textures, because the fries were like hot and greasy,
mm-hmm.
and then the meat is like really soft because it's
it's buttery like, soft.
Yeah, because it's like roasted brisket, mm-hmm. and you can tell it's been slow cooked for hours and hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the coleslaw was cold and crunchy and crisp,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit tangy.
And the pickle.
Pickle
was good.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what I was expecting, but it totally exceeded all expectations that I had for it. Again, not ever having had smoked Montreal meat before, or Montreal smoked meat, however you say it, I was very impressed with it. The club was built in an interesting way. Usually I'm used to a kind of an American style club where it's turkey, ham, and bacon, and then lettuce and tomato and mayonnaise if you opt for it. And it's usually just a little bit of everything layered, and then another piece of bread, a little more of everything layered in your vegetation. This one had the cheese and the Montreal meat on one layer, and then it had bread, and then it had the bacon, and I think some more
cheese, and
the tomato and lettuce.
And it was Swiss cheese that came with it.
And it was a neat texture combination, like you said, because you had your vegetation crunch, and then a little more crunch from the toast, and then you had
and
that
bacon.
Nice soft, and the crunch from the bacon. They kept all the crunchy stuff on one end, and all of the soft stuff on the other. And it worked perfect. And the coleslaw was completely unexpected. It's Romani-style coleslaw.
Yeah, it's German coleslaw.
Yeah, this tangy, sweet, sour, kind of crunchy coleslaw, not the gloppy. Yeah, not the gloppy, you know, Southern Baptist Church picnic coleslaw. And the French fries almost tasted like potato patch fries because they're fresh cut fries. So I'm eating this and I just had a total scummy tourist foreigner moment. And I'm looking at this plate saying, you know, this is great, but I wish I could find a way to get the coleslaw and the fries onto the sandwich with the rest of it.
Make it a true Pittsburgh dream.
Oh, yeah. It had all of the makings of a Pirani Brothers sandwich, but as a platter. It was so good, though.
It was. It was awesome.
And the sandwiches were right around $12 a piece, so they were a little pricey for a sandwich, but worth it.
Yeah. Well, they did have a normal...
like a deli sandwich.
Deli sandwich, which I'm sure would have been fine, but we opted for putting bacon on it.
The giant sandwich of
doom.
Yeah. But it had a lot of meat on it, too.
Yeah.
The bread was really good. The meat was beyond anything I expected, and so good.
And I like the fact that there wasn't any condiments on it.
Yeah.
There wasn't any mayonnaise that we had to ask for it not to be on there.
Yeah.
They didn't put mustard on it. The mustard was on the table if you wanted it.
Yes.
Which I tried it first to see if I wanted mustard, and it didn't need it at all.
No. I didn't want to cover up the taste.
No.
It was so good.
All I wanted to do was just keep tasting it over and over
again.
Yeah,
it was great.
It was like almost silent when we were eating.
Yes, and the club came quartered. Which is the only complaint I ever have with clubs, because they quarter the club, and then you have that giant pile of meat in the middle, and it's really hard to eat, because if you eat the other end, the meat shoots out of it. If you eat the meat end, then you have no meat left for the rest of the sandwich. because no matter how carefully they stack it, there's always like the bare spots towards the edge of the bread. So that's something I was like, oh, well, yeah, no big deal. But I noticed that our friend's Reuben was just cut in half, and it was pretty evenly stacked. And he said it was great. He said the sauerkraut was great, the meat was great. It was a perfect Reuben all around. So they had an amazing display of desserts there.
Oh, my goodness.
We did not have the fortitude to go on.
No. They had, is it carrot cake? They had a chocolate cake. They had a cheesecake.
And these were like... apple pie.
I think the... Oh, the apple pie.
It was called the apple explosion.
Which it was. Mm-hmm. The carrot cake, I swear, must have had like 6 layers to it.
It did.
It was like the pizza carrot cake, they called it. It was gigantic.
Well, the picture of the apple pie, it looked, the cross-section of it looked like a Jell-O mold. You know how you see Jell-O molds with all the pieces of fruit that are stuck in there all crazy and they just cut it in half?
Yeah.
That's what the apple pie looked like, but there was no Jell-O. It was just pie and filling, holding itself together barely, long enough probably for the picture before it just exploded someplace. Thus the apple explosion. So I'm sorry we didn't get the dessert. We're probably not going to get the dessert there before we leave. But I think the next time we come to Montreal, and I do want to come back, because I really do like the city. I'm forming an attachment to it. I want to go back there. If don't even go to eat. I want to go to get dessert and check out the pies and cakes.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
So delicious. Good. So tasty. So what do you think? Almost done?
Almost done. Was there anything else we had to add about Montreal before we say a bientôt?
Well, we started the podcast. We said we're going to talk a little bit about culture as well and traveling. So I don't feel bad tossing this in there. We'll just talk a little bit about Montreal in general and the different quarters we've been to.
Yeah. Well, we did actually find the gay quarter, which is called The Village.
The Village.
And that was pretty interesting. It's actually mostly bars, though. We had to hunt and seek to try and find a souvenir shop, as opposed to Toronto, which is like mostly shops with a couple of bars. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the opposite there. But I imagine for partying, that's a good place to go.
Yes. The Chinese Quarter, Chinatown. We have been all over, front, back, up and down. Great little Chinatown. Tons of places to shop, tons of places to eat. It has a definite authentic feel to it of China. I just love walking down there at night when they still have the shops open, because it just feels so bright.
Yeah.
So, I really like that. I love Old Montreal.
Old
I know
Montreal
it's a total tourist
awesome.
Area, but I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you walk around and, they do have modern businesses in these old buildings, but it doesn't matter. It's like, you can't keep these houses of the dead up and not expect the living to move in, you know?
Well, what I also like about Old Montreal is they have a good balance of tourist shop, restaurants, bars, cafes, and galleries.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge art fan. I usually don't have much of an appreciation for it. When we go to museums, I run around and look at all the historical stuff, and Sheila goes with me, and then when we run into some of the heavy art, I kind of wander away, and she goes and does her thing, and I go read the brochure for the museum or something. So, I mean, I appreciate things like classical art, you know. I loved it when I went and got to see the Mona Lisa. That was really cool. I love seeing famous things like that, but when it comes to more abstract pieces of art, it's completely lost on me. And I'm okay with that. You know, I know that's not my thing, and there are other things that I really appreciate, and I enjoy those instead. But walking around the entire city and running into all these little galleries and seeing things in the window or going in and taking a look around, I have found that it's not that I don't like art, I just haven't found the right kinds of art yet. And up here, I've actually found art that I appreciate. There's some really neat pictures and paintings we've seen and some prints. We've seen some cool sculpture. There was the one little area we went in today, it was a giant historical building that's been remodeled, and now it has galleries and boutiques in it. It's down by the waterfront. I don't remember the name of it, and I'm sure if I did, I'd butcher it.
Bascon. I can't remember the rest of it.
I can't remember the rest of it, but it's one of those
things. It's
got
a big silver dome on it. It's very famous.
Yeah.
And I'm an idiot for not remembering the name.
So, they had... you can't take pictures of the displays in there, unfortunately, because they had this cool furniture display that were modern interpretations of furniture. They had a bedstand that looked like it had been stretched out to the left.
Yeah, it was, like, leaning over. It was had all these really nice curves on it.
Yeah.
It was, like, distorted, so the drawers were kind of, like, wonky looking.
And it looked like something out of a Dr. Seuss book or something almost.
Yeah.
You know, it had the same kind of dimensions to it. And the display was full of neat furnitures like that. There were some really neat pictures and paintings in that same gallery that we both oohed and awed over and said, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, there was, like, this really nice, I hesitate to call it folk art. It was colorful like folk art, but it's slightly muted. It wasn't crazy colors, mm-hmm. but the colors that were there were bright. Mm-hmm. And there was lots and lots of detail on it.
Yeah.
And there was all these little outdoor rural scenes. I can't remember the name of the artist. We took some pictures of it.
Actually, we didn't.
Oh, you're not allowed to.
Yeah, well, the one display said you can't take pictures, so I didn't want to whip the camera out anyplace else and get yelled at in French and not understand and then get kicked out because I didn't understand.
Yeah.
So I was kind of respectful of that, but I wish we could have because we ran into a lot of neat things, especially in that one room at the end.
Yeah. And then, I should have taken a picture of the tag at least so I could have found more stuff by him.
Yeah. And then the other day, just walking down St. Paul, we found a gallery that had a display up. They're doing an exhibit of a gentleman named Jacek Yerka, J-A-C-E-K-Y-E-R-K. We were running short of time, so we didn't have time to run in and look, but what they had on display in the window and the book they had of his paintings was really cool. It stopped just short of being fantasy art, but it had that flavor to it. It was very fanciful, very... It was the one with, like, the,
There was the one that really caught my eye. It looked like a big, giant volcano erupting at night. And then you looked at the volcano, and the splatters of magma actually looked like little lighted windows, so it was actually a city at night.
Mm-hmm. And he did pieces like that where these, like, huge, convoluted, really busy pictures that made up this whole, like, a city of some kind. There was a lot of city theme amongst the pictures he had. And that was something else, and I'm like, that's cool. If we had more time, I'd love to go and stop and take a look around.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel better as a person. I feel I'm not an uncultured barbarian. I'm just an uncultured barbarian that hadn't seen any things that would catch my interest yet. So yay!
Well, that's one of the reasons why I liked that little animation, and I'll put a link to it in this, the Kunstbar, which is the art bar, because the whole kind of theme of this is it's a bar that will serve you drinks that make you turn into different types of art, and you kind of have to try a bunch of different things until you find what you like, and when you find what you like, then you leave.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, there's a type of art out there for anybody. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe in pushing art on people that don't appreciate it, they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do that to somebody? That's like making somebody eat something they don't like.
Yeah. I would never force somebody
try it,
to
but
do
if
it.
You don't like it, don't eat it again.
I had a discussion online with a friend recently, and I mentioned poutine, and she said, oh God, I could never eat that. And I'm like, oh, it's great. You've got the salty and the greasy of the French fries and the cheese texture and the gravy mixed in with it. She said, no, I just can't. The cheese curd alone, oh, I couldn't touch it. I'm like, okay, I respect that. If you know it's something that's not going to be your thing, I would never force you to try it.
Yeah.
I would never trick you into trying it.
No.
So.
Or look down at you because you don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're just different, that's all.
Oh, and also, the last thing we saw that I want to talk about on the art subject was the Cthulhu Under Glass.
Oh, yes.
Okay, it wasn't called Cthulhu Under Glass. The title of the piece was Antidote. But and again, we couldn't take a picture of it because I was dying to try to get a picture of this. Maybe we'll go back tomorrow and try to be sneaky. But it's this bell jar, like a specimen jar, and underneath it there's a glass octopus who's like kind of beckoning with one tentacle almost, and he's kind of leering and winking. And then on the glass itself there's a little skull and crossbones drawn, but it's not a traditional skull and crossbones, it looks a little cartoony. And there's a drawer that pulls out that has a glass syringe in it and something else, a dropper. And then on the top of the bell jar, there's a little antidote bottle or something, medicine bottle. And it just, we both looked at it and we're like, wow, it's Cthulhu under glass. That's kind
of
cool.
I'd love to buy some of this stuff, but it was like $3,300.
Oh yeah, this is totally out of our price range ever. But this is the first time in my life I've ever walked into someplace and said, if I had money, I would buy that. If I was rich or I had just won the lottery or something, distant great uncle I never knew I had died and left me a couple $1,000,000 and I wanted to decorate my home in big girl style instead of fangirl style, these are some of the things I would pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've never been able to say that before.
Yeah.
I've always walked in and meh, I don't care. So.
I know that usually I'm the one that's like overwhelmed by the art, but this time it was you.
I know, and that never happened. So we're probably going to have one more section to add to this later.
Oh, before we go. Oh. We did find the area that we didn't like.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And people, as soon as I say that, people are going to think that it was like the ghetto or something.
Mm-mm.
But it wasn't.
We love the ghetto. The ghetto was great.
That's where we
belong. We walked through there. We went to, after we left Dunn's, I was looking for a comic book shop. It was supposed to be a two-floor comic book shop that was supposed to be on Crescent Street. And I didn't find it. I think it had closed down, and the site I get the information from was out of date, which it happens. Some of the stores like that, they close down really fast, especially when the economy starts to hit the skids. Yeah. So, no big deal. We wandered over a couple streets from Dunn's, went up Crescent, didn't find it, and we found ourselves in the trendy part of town.
It was on the Maison Neuve, kind of, I guess, west of the of McGill College.
Yeah, it was that whole area. This is where the trendy, cool people go to buy things and hang out.
The pretty people.
The pretty people. Not just the pretty people, the trendy, cool people, because some of them weren't very pretty.
Okay.
But at one point, when I pointed this out to Sheila, after she was completely oblivious traipsing through this part of town, somebody walked by and Sheila said, "Oh my god, I feel like a Chanel magazine has just been flipped in my face, flipbook style."
Because we sat there on a bench for a while and it was like out of work models or something were populating that section of town.
And I've not gathered that many dirty looks in a long time. You were oblivious because you were oohing and aahing over the architecture.
Yeah.
I was a little bit more...
I was like, ooh, gargoyles. Ooh, pillars.
Well, I was a little bit more focused because I was looking for something in specific. And we got a heck of a lot of dirty looks. And I know we look like tourists, but dang.
Well, we're not like, we don't look like we're homeless. I mean, no. I'm wearing jeans and a black t-shirt that's in good repair and a black cadet hat.
We look like tourists or college students.
Yeah.
And that's most of the time we get mistaken for college students. I guess we might be starting to look a little old for college students, but people still think we're in school.
No, I think we're graduate students then, I guess.
Yes. So, but either way, I mean, I'm comfortable with how I look. I'm comfortable with what I'm wearing when I'm out doing this sort of thing because I want to be comfortable. If we go to someplace nicer, we dress up appropriate to the dress code of the restaurant.
Right.
But we stopped at one place. It was a steak and cigar bar. And I got really excited when we saw the window of it because they were dry curing meat in the window. And you don't, hardly anybody does that. We covered it in Last Chance to Eat, that episode.
Yeah.
About how dry curing is kind of on its way out because you lose so much weight with the meat. So we try to get a picture of it through the glass. I don't know how it's going to come out because it was the sun was behind us and it was some reflection. But still, it was exciting to see that. And Sheila kind of wandered over to check out the menu, which the place is hideously expensive.
I was like, oh, we can afford the onion rings. They're $7.
Yeah. The place is expensive, but it is what it is. And if you go someplace like that, you expect to pay $50 a person.
Yeah.
Because you're getting something that's like a work of art as far as food is concerned. And it's a cigar bar, so you expect to see expensive cigars. So there's a fellow standing outside of it, and while she's oohing and aahing over the menu, he's just shooting us nothing but dirty glance after glare after scowl. And then he finally walked away, and I don't know if we were lousing up the joint looking at the menu or what.
Or maybe he doesn't think that females belong in a place like that.
I don't know, but
I wouldn't have
dreamed of walking in there dressed the way we are now. I would have gone home and gotten into dress clothes if we were to go to someplace like that. But that set the tone for the rest of the hike through that part of town. And as soon as we went a couple blocks over and we're back on St. Catharines, that's fine.
It was like we were with our people again. Because there's like the punks and the rockers and the bohemians and the gay people.
And the soccer moms.
Yeah.
And the secretaries and everybody else. And I mean, even walking through parts of D.C., when we were kind of lost on Embassy Row, nobody gave us a hassle. We never got a dirty look. We had some nice gentleman there stop and help us.
Yeah.
And we obviously looked totally lost. So
we were clueless. We had no idea.
And he was really friendly. He wasn't like, "Can I help you?" He's like, "Oh, you look like you need directions. I know how you feel because I felt that way too before here."
Yeah.
So we just might want to point that out. If you're going to go further west of Crescent Street or on Crescent Street and go north, you're in the trendy section of town and you may not find things that you like.
That's where the rude people can be.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that they're all rude, but that's where we encountered it. And there's a big, French people have a reputation for being rude.
Mm-hmm.
So we've met nothing but nice, friendly people in around the Chinatown area where we've been staying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time we encountered
anything
people that
like
treated
that.
Us like we weren't worth their time.
Yeah.
Was in that area.
Yeah.
Up on...
And, well, it's more like Maison Neuve. It was between Crescent and, I want to say, McGill.
Yeah.
It's kind of that section through there. That's where most of the boutiques are. So now we're probably going to get hate mail from people who, well, that's what you deserve. I don't know. But
that's fine.
It's just we wanted to point out, we found an area where we weren't comfortable. We know the people who listen to this are a lot like us, where you're willing to dress up to meet the expectation of where you're going, but... If you're just cutting through town as a tourist, you don't want to be treated that way, so be aware of that.
Yeah.
So, anything else to add till our next segment?
I think that's it.
Okay, well, this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila. And we are Zwei Fat Chicks. We'll be right back.
Okay, we're back. This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Zwei Fat Chicks.
And this is the last part of the Montreal foodgasm. We're actually back home.
Sitting on the balcony.
in Oshawa, because we have since migrated to the beautiful metropolis of Oshawa. So if you hear some cars going by and a little bit of wind, it's because we're sitting outside. It's a balmy, what, 30-some degrees out, probably?
About there.
But we're hardcore, so.
So,
two last places to review, I think, and an extra shout-out to an outstanding beer, so.
Definitely. So, the one tea place that we went to and got a bunch of Dragonwell tea.
Oh,
they
so
did
good.
Old school customer service.
Oh, yeah.
The lady that took care of us, she wanted to make sure that she explained all the folklore and myth that went along with the tea.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was old news to us, it was still a joy to listen to her.
Oh, yeah.
Recant the positive attributes of this tea.
You don't find customer service like that in very many places. And this is a little tea shop. It's in Chinatown. It's on, what was that street where the hotel was? That cross section?
It's actually on 1127 Clark Street, but it's on the corner of Clark and Rene Levesque.
Yes. It's right by the Travel Lodge. It's across the alley from the Travel Lodge, because Clark's really kind of like an alley almost.
Yeah.
Because it leads down into that walking street that is really the heart of Chinatown in Montreal. And we ran into it at the beginning of the week, and we were all excited. I ran in, I looked around, I'm like, oh my god, I could spend so much money in here, and I left before I did.
Yes.
And we came back at the end just to make sure we didn't blow the budget at the tea shop. And I
blew the rest of the budget at the tea
yes.
shop.
Yes. Well, I love Dragonwell. It's one of the teas I discovered in China, and I really have a fondness for it. It's a green tea that, I guess the best way to identify it is just the flat leaf. A lot of other leaves curl. Dragonwell, when they dry it, it has a very flat leaf to it. But when it rehydrates in the tea, it becomes a very large, bushy leaf. And it has an almost... The flavor almost reminds me of matcha.
Yeah.
But not quite.
It's kind of grassy.
Yes.
A little bit sweet.
Yes.
And it definitely has those nice,
subtle,
fragrant, but subtle notes.
Yes. And it's... I don't know. It's good for, like, a good 4 or 5 infusions, almost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those hearty teas where you can pour hot water on it all day. I used to see people in the department where I was teaching, where they'd come to work with different teas in their little glass jar, and all day they'd just pour hot water on it, and it would still be tea at the end of the day. And then at the end of the day, they'd just add more tea on top of it, and the next day they'd just refill it.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that, but nonetheless, when you get Dragonwell, you can add a heck of a lot of water to it throughout the day, and it'll still taste good.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of my go-to work teas, because I do the same thing. I'll put it in my tea mug, and then I'll keep refilling it throughout the day.
Yeah, and it has a reputation for being a royal tea, or a very, very, a tea of high quality.
Yes. And you walk through the shop. It's a tiny little shop. It's almost a closet.
Well, it's like a corner shop, too,
yes.
Because the door is actually right on the corner of the building.
Mm-hmm. And there are just jars of tea everywhere, and the labels on the jar tell you what the tea is. It tells you what health attributes it's supposed to contribute to, and it tells you what's in the tea, too.
Yeah.
So if you're somebody with allergies, you appreciate that, because you
Definitely.
Know what you're getting into. You know, oh, this has something that may give me a rash. I don't want that. Oh, but this looks good. I can definitely drink that.
Right.
Fantastic customer service, an amazing selection, quite possibly one of the best selections I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. And when we told them that we were doing a podcast, they ran and got us a business card. And the name of the place is Specialties. And the French love puns. There's this, it's a brew pub in somewhere in Quebec. I don't know exactly where it is, but I remember it's Le Bon et le Malt. But that's supposed to be a play on, instead of the good and the bad in French, it's the good and the malt. And it's owned by Mr. Howard Lowe. Totally recommend it. Definitely
yes.
check it out. If you're in the city, you need to stop by Specialties.
Oh, yeah. If you're a tea fan, you have to stop by their shop and pick up something different. I would, the next time we go back, I want to get some more Dragonwell, obviously, because we've sampled the Dragonwell since we came home, and it is outstanding. And I'd also really like to walk in and just say, what would you recommend? What is your favorite tea? And I want to buy what their favorite tea is, because I bet it's darn good.
I bet that they have a nice sampling of different teas that they regularly go to.
Yes. And this is actually something that we've kind of, since Montreal now, we've decided is a good travel habit. When we went, we took a lot of tea with us, so we could make hot... We figured there would be a coffee maker in the room, and we could make hot water and just make our own tea in our tea mugs. We have these spiffy travel mugs that some friends got for us that have the tea strainer in it, and then a sipping lid on top of it, so you can infuse your tea and pull the leaves out, or put the leaves at the bottom, and then the strainer keeps the leaves from coming out.
And then add some more hot water to it.
Exactly.
And do it for a couple of infusions.
So we thought this would be a great travel idea. You know, it'll make a cheap beverage throughout the trip, and it'll still be good, especially since it's a little chilly out. And I'm surprised at how well it worked out.
It worked out really well, yeah. I think.
And there was even a hot water kettle.
Yeah, there was an electric kettle in our room, yeah. So we were good to go.
Yeah, and I think this is something that Sheila and I are going to use as a future travel habit. Take tea with us, so if we can get some hot water on the way, we're always going to have a tasty beverage no matter where we go. So.
Definitely.
So the next place we want to talk about was, again, another random find in Montreal, Chinatown, because we're Asian files.
Yes.
And it was a little shop. I do not remember the name of the cross street that was the heart of Montreal, Chinatown, that was a pedestrian street. But it was a little tiny shop that sold dragon's beard candy.
And I had never had this before, and I don't think you had either.
No, I'd never seen it before.
I'd never even heard of it before.
No, but it's amazing.
It's really, really good. I don't know what the actual name of the little kiosk is. We can look that up and provide a link.
But I found a review for it actually online after we came home. I'm like, yeah. Let me check this out. Oh, look, there's a bunch of reviews for this little shop.
But it has a big banner that says Dragon's Beard Candy. So if you see that,
you can't miss it if you're going down.
It out.
Yeah, you can't miss it if you're going down the pedestrian street in Chinatown.
Yeah. Now, to our friends that have nut allergies, you may not want to partake of this because it does have crushed peanuts in it. But we're working on a alternate formula recipe.
Yes, and we will post the results of that hopefully soon.
Using something like edamame.
Edamame, would be perfect.
Or roasted pumpkin seeds, I think, would also yes. be pretty good, too. Because the peanuts aren't in big chunks. They're kind of, like, roughly crushed.
Yes, so they're the center of the candy.
It would provide the same texture and relatively the same taste.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And what it is they take a chunk of sugar and they harden it. They boil it and soften it, so you have this like little disc of sugar. They put a hole in it, and they start to stretch it. And it's almost like cotton candy, but it's not as fine. So they'll stretch it and twist it and stretch it and twist it and stretch it and twist it until they have this nice ropey piece of sugar that has several hundred strands of sugar in it, up to 1,000-some strands of sugar in it.
Yeah, doesn't it like exponentially increase?
Yes, it ends up being about 1,000 to 1,200 strands of sugar, I believe. And it's all coated in this glutinous rice flour, so the strands don't stick together. So it's actually an individual strand that when it hits your tongue, it dissolves, much like cotton candy does. Mm-hmm. But it's not as fine as cotton candy.
It's more like a
thread.
It's a rougher texture?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which gives it the dragon's beard name.
Yes. And then they take that, they cut it off into a chunk, like a strip a couple inches long. They put a little bit of filling in it, which is the nuts, the roasted peanuts, crushed up. And then they just fold it over, and that's the dragon's beard candy. And it was supposed to have been developed for the Emperor of China. It was a delicacy that only so many people can make. It wasn't something you made every day for your kids or that kind of thing.
Well, I imagine with the price of sugar the way it used to be before the, 1950s?
Oh, it was a delicacy,
then
I'm sure.
Then it was a delicacy, I'm sure, definitely.
Yeah, even turn of the century. Around early 1900s, sugar really came down in price. But nonetheless, you're thinking, 1400, 1500, 1600 China, that was definitely a delicacy reserved for the aristocracy, most likely just for the emperor himself to give out to whoever wanted it, made in his kitchens kind of thing. But it was good. I mean, it hits your tongue, it starts to dissolve, and then you have that crunchy bit to chew up at the end.
Yeah, again, because
it's all texture.
The Chinese are all about the texture. Well, Asian people in general, their cuisine is all about the texture, which... Mm-hmm. is so fun to explore for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, Montreal, what did you think?
Well, before we finish that, the candy was $4 for a six-pack or 50 cents a piece, I think. We only got a piece each because our benefactor that took us to Montreal has a nut allergy, and we didn't want to kill him on accident. So we made sure we ate it and, didn't have anything to worry about harming him with. But it's a cute little snack to have, like a dessert kind of thing, if you just ate on a restaurant in the area and you want something sweet to finish off the night with.
Or get a package and bring it back to the hotel.
That too, take it home. If we go back, well, we will go back. I am in love with Montreal as a city. When we go back, I think I'm going to pick up a six-pack or two to bring home, if I don't get adventurous and make it myself, which...
Yeah.
I think we can pull it off.
I think so, too.
I think we've got the skills.
It's going to be about the technique.
It's about the
Once
technique.
Once we make it a couple times, we're going to be
exactly.
A-okay.
Exactly. And there's some awesome YouTube videos illustrating every single step on how to make it. So I think armed with those, almost anybody really can make it if they're willing to, put a candy thermometer into a pan of sugar to make mm-hmm. sure you don't overboil it.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not a hard technique at all. And the last thing we want to talk about was that beer.
La Belle Gaule, which... I did some research
Spell
online.
Because yeah, nobody's going to be able to find it.
It's G-U-E-L-E. And from what I
understand... Two L's or one L.
Okay. From what I understand, it is the last bit of a phrase, which is nice butt, pretty face. And this part is the pretty face part. So it's like a beer that's called Pretty Face.
It's
But everyone gets
good.
The joke. but it's very, very good. And from the information I was able to find online, people might mistakenly think that it's macro swill, but it's not. It's a totally local Quebec beer.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be a victim of its own success and be ubiquitous and everywhere. And the logo is so cute. It's this little sphinx with a toque on it. How could you not love a sphinx with a little toque?
And it was everywhere. It was partway through the week we saw it at the grocery store. It was on sale, and they had this killer special, buy a 12-pack, get a glass with it free. And we thought, you know what? Let's pick it up. Let's try it. If it's terrible, it's still beer. How bad can it be? And it shocked the heck out of us.
It was amazing. There's the Roots, which is a red.
Mm-hmm.
The Original, which is kind of like...
It's a lager.
A dark lager.
It's a good lager. If you're a Yuengling fan and you're in Quebec, find this beer, drink the Original. You will be a very happy person.
And then there was the Blonde, which is a pale ale.
Yes.
But it's not a super bitey, crazy, rip-your-face-off pale ale.
Well, the variety pack, which is sold in stores, I mean, you can't please a better variety of people than with that, that selection. You've got your basic beer drinker, which most people are happy with a lager. And then even people who really like beer and into it still like a lager as a comfort beer.
Yeah.
You have the red, which people who are a little more into the darker beers are very happy with the red. And then you have the people who are kind of hopheads. They're happy with the Blonde.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a variety pack that is has universal appeal. It's great.
Yeah. The only caveat I have to throw out there is that the prices don't include the deposit on the bottles.
Yes.
So when you get up to the register, expect to add $2. So,
yes.
But for $14.99 for
That was a sale price.
It was a sale price, but
I think even the regular price was only about $20, which for Ontario prices is still right in line with everything else.
Yeah.
Great beer. I'd love to find their brewery someday and try to get a tour.
Yeah. And there was signs for it all over the place when we were walking around Montreal. Like, it was, like, sale beer.
Yes.
You know, check out our daily special with La Belle Gaule.
And I think the next time we go back, we know what we'll drink when we go out. It's a go-to beer now for us in Montreal. And I hope and pray and cross my fingers that someday we'll see it in the beer store or the LCBO down here, because it's a darn good beer.
Good beer.
That was the hidden gem, I think, of the Montreal trip, was discovering that beer.
Exactly. Now, St. Ambrose...
That and the noodle place.
Yeah, St. Ambrose makes amazing beer.
Yes.
But La Belle Gaule, oh, goodness, I could drink a lot of that.
That was the underdog that popped up out of nowhere, the dark horse that was like, hey, look at me. Oh, yes, you are something to look at, you know?
Yes, indeedy.
Good stuff. So, overall, we are in love with Montreal as a city.
Yes, between all the old town to check out, the bohemian punk scene, all the
shopping,
historical parts.
Lots of shopping. I discovered art I actually like in Montreal, all the restaurants, because, you know, food is primary to us. I mean, there's so much in that city. I could go back twice a year for an extended weekend and still, for the next 20 years, and still not find everything that there is to find in that city. I am in love with Montreal.
So Montreal, merci beaucoup. Thank you for showing us a great time.
Excellent place. We love you. Thank you for dispelling a lot of myths about French people in Canada.
Yes.
Because you are a very hospitable city. We definitely want to return. So anything else to add?
I think that's pretty much it.
All right, this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila. And we're Spy Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this Five Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.